It's the smooth sounds of Good Papa Radio, KGPOP, OPA, with your hosts, Dad Paxis and Rob, the happiest of hobbits.
It's not easy crashing a coach, but Big Deke Enterprises, we'll do it.
If we have to crash it twice, we'll crash it twice.
Yeah. It's not easy driving coaches down a road.
Ask Bruno. He knows.
As Bruno does well know, but you know, eventually, Big Deke Enterprises, we'll get you there. And just like that, Big Bruno Deke gets everybody to Altdorf in episode 6.
It's a beautiful thing.
Don't listen to this. It is. Don't listen to this if you don't want spoilers for episodes 6 through 10. If you do want spoilers, stick around.
Yeah, we've got them. We've got them for those episodes only.
We're going to spoil the hell out of those episodes for you.
Yeah, they're like rotten milk at this point. Like a wizard miscast somewhere in the area.
Pretty much, yeah. It's all chonky. It's the best miscast on that table. Is they have you spoil milk and you spoil beer.
Ugh. And you...
I love it.
I'm not going to spoil anything else.
No. No, you don't want...
I almost did.
We're not spoiling almost... the cheese. That's where we draw the line.
No. I think cheese is already spoiled, though. Or at least
fermented. Spoil?
Yeah, it's a controlled spoil, but it's still spoiled.
We should get Gertie from Settling the Southlands to come on and talk to us about the spoiling of cheeses.
I think that would be awesome.
Which is another PCN podcast everyone should go listen to. It's fantastic.
Yeah, among all of them. Not a bad one in the bunch.
Especially Elite Eight Showdown. So. Especially Elite Eight Showdown.
I didn't want to bring it up, but now that you said it, I'm going to say Elite Eight Showdown, it is the only place on the internet where they'll take anything and everything and put them up in an 8-person bracket. Fight it out, leave the blood on
that. I mean, you
bracket.
Did promise in episode 0 that. When we were piloting this that you were going to mention it every episode, so we might as well try and make sure we get those jabs in there.
Thank you for allowing me to keep my promise to the listeners.
Yeah, it's what I'm here for. It's what I'm here for. That, every opportunity I get to, you know, tell Dan to stop danceling things, it's just wrong. So, what were we talking about? Altdorf, right.
Altdorf, yes. Not the real dwarf, but the Altdorf.
The alternative dwarves, that's, yes. Bunch of blue-haired dwarves, that's what this is. Episode 6 is Altdorf for Hire, of A Grim Podcast of Perilous Adventure. Though anyone who's at this episode probably should have already listened to those. If you haven't, go listen to 6 through 10. Come back. Enjoy our banter about it. That's what we're here for.
We're fans and friends and friends of fans.
We're fans. That's why this is a PCN fan cast. So they get to Altdorf, as we said. They come through. They're riding through the city. We get a really good description of... Honestly, it's a description I use every time now as GM to kind of explain to people how Imperial buildings look. Is they don't necessarily look run down all the time. A lot of them do. But they're not a lot of straight lines. They're more just things built on top of other things. Like, they're trying to build a skyscraper with medieval era technology. They don't really have the ability to do it, so it's just, here's another floor thrown on top of another floor, but we don't have the space to match it, so it's kind of off to the side for some reason.
Yeah, what can we lean it against so it won't fall over in a stiff wind?
Yep. That's a lot of Imperial human architecture. As they're going through the city, you know, I kind of imagine at this point, you know, Mina's probably a little in shock. Lucky is probably way more in shock. I doubt he's ever seen this many people. Altdorf is a really big city. Mm-hmm. I'm not quite sure on the exact population. They don't really have a great way of doing that in the Altdorf supplement book, which is great. It's so good. I don't believe it was out by the time that we're recording this episode. It is absolutely fantastic, though, if anybody's doing this game. I highly recommend you get it.
So Dan did bring up a couple of things, though, when they first came in there. One specific to Lucky, that he felt that there was an aura about the place.
Yes.
I don't know if that's from the book or not, because I don't have any of the books.
It kind of is. The biggest thing for that is because the Colleges of Magic are there.
Yes.
And some of the main capitals of each province and stuff have, you know, they have colleges there. You know, it's a thing. Middenheim has one. I know Nuln has one, but it's really small in Nuln.
It's kind of oily, too.
Altdorf is the colleges, though. These are the colleges that, if memory serves right, were founded by Teclis, who's, like, the top mage of the elves and totally not a giant poopy head. I don't like high elves.
Oh, we were friends for a minute there. Oh.
Yeah, I know. What, you like dark elves. Dark elves don't like high elves.
Well, they like to use them as slaves.
I mean, that's fair, and you're still learning the Malekith lore. But, yeah, the colleges in Altdorf are the original colleges. This is where humanity, you know, was taught to do that. I imagine they probably have some of these things called Elven Waystones that help kind of channel magic from the Chaos Gate in the north throughout the world to help control it and make it easier for people to wield it, yada yada. So that's probably why, you know, magic is a little funky there. There may be other things, but I'm not going to speculate on those because I don't want to ruin anything if, you know, they come back to Altdorf later in this story. We have in the coach, we've got Bruno. He's driving. We've got Carl, Bruno's friend. We've got Mina, Lucky's mortal enemy at this point for the murder of his friend, Rolf. We have Lucky, who is the young... At this point, he's kind of a con artist.
Yep.
Tim keeps trying to get Lucky to do all these things that are really, you know, kind of skeevy. He's trying to get free food, free money, get all the, you know, all the stuff he can out of people. At one point, he talks about running scams.
Oh, his dad would run scams, Wolf, yes.
And that they got arrested. Yep. Yeah, so it's, you know, we're getting an interesting angle here on Lucky. The other person we have in the coach, though, is a young physician student named Ernst. And Ernst has not really been a fan of the party at all, but, you know, they're still going to Altdorf, so he's with them. Eventually, they make their way through the city. They come to this place called the Königsplatz, which is this big, you know, town square in Altdorf. It's a town square, not necessarily the town square, but it's a big one.
Sure.
There's this big statue in the middle. I think it's of Magnus the Pious. Dan doesn't mention in the show. I didn't put in enough work to go research that because it's such a small detail. Sorry.
It's okay. You're forgiven.
As they kind of pull up, you know, it's this big, big town square. Lots of market stalls everywhere. Ernst gets out, and as he's getting out, I believe Bruno is trying to help him find his bag.
Yeah, looking for a tip.
And
while he's doing so.
He's clearly looking for a tip. And my favorite thing about this is there's no other bags on top of the coach.
Yeah, or bodies for that matter, because there's...
Ernst is the only passenger. Yeah, it's just Mina sitting up on top of the coach. Yep. That's it. And so Bruno's just pointing, going, is this your bag? No, it's the bag right there. Is this your bag? No, it's this bag right here. Is this your bag? Yeah, that's my bag. It's the only bag up there. Good old Bruno. He then throws down the suitcase, and it immediately gets scooped up by somebody, and they start running off into the distance.
Which provokes one of the most...
Ernst...
This is where the most unexpected thing, from my perspective, happens.
Mine too.
I mean, Ernst is like, somebody stole this, stop him. And the most unlikely of characters, Lucky, decides, oh, I can stop him, and chucks a dagger at him.
Yeah. And hits this dude in the back.
Yep.
And just, I don't think he killed him.
No, because he ran off. Like he had to chase him down.
Yes, that's right. But the dude is just laying on the ground going, oh, God. Lucky comes up, picks up the bag, rips the dagger on the guy's back, and the guy just scurries away. Which may be some foreshadowing for later in this episode.
But Lucky was surprisingly fighty, tanky, effective in combat for a change.
Yeah, that's not foreshadowing. It almost never happens again, and it's hilarious. But, you know, I think this is also with no fortune or fate points, because he spent all of them on gambling.
They gone, yeah.
Yeah, but he gets the suitcase back. Lucky gets the suitcase back to Ernst. Bruno then asks for a tip, and Ernst says no. Wow, everybody kind of is just, you know... I believe, actually, no, Lucky isn't the only one who chased down the suitcase guy, though.
No, I believe...
Because Carl and Mina chase after Lucky, who's chasing the guy.
Yep.
And they all, you know, Ernst, I believe, follows them. They give him the case back. He just kind of leaves. They are all kind of trying to figure out what to do. Bruno's still back on the coach. And this weird dude comes up to the three of them and keeps, like, staring at Carl. And he does this weird thing where he rubs his ear, like, with his pinky and his thumb on the opposite side of his head. It's really strange.
His right ear with his left pinky. And then I think Carl tries to do it exactly back to him, which doesn't provoke the response that he was expecting. And then tries to do it the opposite way.
Yeah, the guy just doesn't seem to understand what's going on. He kind of looks behind them like he's trying to look at somebody else, but nobody really sees who this is. Or actually, I believe Carl does. Carl turns around and sees a man with a scar on his neck or something like that, I believe.
That's his...
It's a real quick thing. If you blink, you're going to miss it. It kind of gets passed over by the party real fast.
Well, nobody can make a perception check either.
And then... that's also, that's really true. Eventually, they make their way back to the coach. As they're doing that, they spot somebody that Carl knows. And it's this big, large, not fat, but large man, kind of with this weird, like, galloping walloping gait.
Sure.
Galloping. I can't talk today. This guy has a big walloping gait, and we find out that this is a friend of Carl's dad named Joseph. And we actually get a bit of backstory about Carl here, that he has been out of Altdorf for a year. He used to work with his father, and he just decided that it was time for him to get out on his own. And so I guess he's just been kind of following Bruno around on the road for a year.
Because there's always work to be done when Bruno's around.
Somebody's
got to help him up into the cart, and
that's one way to phrase it. Boy, somebody's got to literally roll him out of bed every morning. Yeah. Joseph talks with the three of them for a bit, and they get hired by him to come help him deliver some wine to Bogenhofen.
Yes.
Which we also find out this is Lucky's first time ever having an actual job, actually getting hired, promise of pay, all these kinds of things. Mina says, hey, what a coincidence. There's this inheritance they want to get. They need to go to Bogenhofen anyway. So, yeah, this seems like a win-win. Perfect. We also get the first no, I'm Lucky joke.
Yes.
So
the first of what will become a recurring theme.
Yes. I believe you tried to make that joke in the last episode, and I just didn't understand.
It's all good.
Eventually, they make their way back to the coach, and they get there to see Bruno standing on top of the coach, whipping around the coach to keep people back, and there's nobody around the coach. People are not even trying to come near it. Like, he's just whipping around. There's nobody around him. It's hilarious.
He's obviously very effective in his preventive antics, because the coach is extremely safe at this point.
absolutely. He's, you know, this is just how good Bruno is at the job. You know, he's just, he is nothing if not committed when he commits to something. Bruno basically, you know, tells all of them, hey, congratulations on your new job. He's going to, you know, he asks them, is there anywhere else you want to go in the city? He can take you them there before they drop off. And instead, everyone decides they want to go back with Bruno to the Ratchet Lines kind of, I guess, depot where all the coaches are. Yep. And everything. And they want to talk about it because Bruno is certain he's going to get a promotion because, you know, these other people weren't doing their jobs. He, you know, he saved their run that they're supposed to be doing. He saved this coach. It all would have been delayed, make Ratchet Lines look horrible. He kept everything on track, and he got all these people here. He's certain he's getting a promotion.
And they're going to give him rave reviews.
Oh, yeah, and then on top of that, he's getting a bunch of five-star Yelp reviews.
Yep.
It is at this moment that everybody kind of turns because they see lots of loud trumpets. It's hilarious in the show because Dan gets scared shitless by this because the audio is just so sudden, which is even funnier to me because I have to imagine he's the one controlling that.
True. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. And lo and behold, who do they see? Carl Franz. The Emperor himself marching through the Königsplatz with, you know, a full regiment of Imperial halberdiers. And he's got Reichsguard knights with him. And he's got the Reichland Runefang, which is a magical sword. Every elector count in the Empire has these magic swords that are, you know, the symbol of office.
So now you would think that the crowd would be impressed by this, but what I remember catching out of it was that he's been doing this more often than maybe would be typical. And the people are like, again?
Yeah, Lucky is overcome with this sense of, oh my god, it's the Emperor, holy crap. And then everyone else kind of looks around and they see nobody cares. The entire crowd just doesn't care.
Yep, the crowd is not impressed.
So they make a couple gossip checks and they find out a couple things. Number one, the first thing, I believe it was Mina that notices, it's kind of weird that he has the Runefang. The Emperor has Galmaraz, which I'm not sure if you know what Galmaraz is, Dan.
No, but I did catch that with him using the Runefang, that wasn't what he was supposed to be caring about. Because he usually gives it to someone else. Is that not true, or do I have that right?
No, you have that exactly right. So the Emperor himself wields Galmaraz, which is Sigmar's hammer. It's the hammer that was made for Sigmar and that he fought with it and everything and formed the Empire.
Because he's worthy, right? That's why, you know, he was able to lift it.
I don't really know the story of how he gets Galmaraz. But the Reichland Runefang was also lost for a while. And it either gets found by one of Carl Franz's friends, or, like, it's found and Carl Franz gives it to his friend. I think it's his friend who finds it. But his name is, I believe, Kurt Hellborg.
I remember, I've just actually read this. Yes, and I think you're spot on with that.
He is a friend of Carl Franz. He is the Emperor's champion. He's his defender and all this stuff. He is also the one who typically has the Reichland Runefang. So it's just kind of weird. He has this sword. And then even more than that, as they're talking to everyone, they also find out that it's weird he's not on his griffin. And they go, he has a griffin? What the hell is this about?
Right.
Carl Franz has a griffin named Deathclaw. Which, if you're going to name a griffin, I mean, yeah, pretty spot on there,
Deathclaw's a pretty good name, yeah.
Yeah. So they find out he hasn't been to his griffin lives in the Imperial Zoo. And he hasn't been to visit his griffin in a while, which is also unusual. And this has led to rumors that his griffin is sick. Carl Franz is sick. It's just, it's really strange that nobody really knows what's going on with any of them. And just these things combined with all the rumors about the Emperor that they hear from at the inn, it's just kind of more of this thing of like, okay, something's going on, but it's so above their pay grade that the party's just like, all right, whatever. Which I get.
So I will tell you, when I heard this, I thought to myself, as a listener who doesn't know anything about it, the way that Dan describes it, I'm like, that's not the Emperor. That was the first thing that came to my mind.
They do talk about it more in the book, but I don't know if it's going to lead to something that happens on later in the show. So I kind of don't want to come out and say whether it is or isn't and all these kinds of things. It's just all this stuff is a little strange.
It is definitely strange. But I will say this. The party doesn't seem to at least react like they think it's strange.
No, to be honest with you, the party kind of, you know, they go, oh, it's the Emperor. And then people go, that's not the Emperor. And then they go, but it looks like the Emperor. And they go, yeah, well, even if it is, he's been doing this, you know, like 3 times a week for a month. Like, we don't care anymore. And they go, oh, okay. And then they just go back to going to the Ratchet Lines place with Bruno. He's going to get his
promotion and his reward.
They get there and, you know, Bruno brings the coach around. Everybody gets out. They go into the office with him. And they meet Bruno's boss, who is a dwarf. You know, everybody's, you know, talking about, you know, oh, yeah, this is how great Bruno is. He bought them rooms. He bought them food. And everything's fine until Lucky goes, oh, yeah, then we, you know, I was worried after that whole thing with the first coach, but this second one's so much better.
Yep. 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 Yep.
And then the boss kind of goes, what? And we get, Lucky then basically spills out everything that has happened up until this point. And the boss goes, okay, so what happened to the first coach? And Lucky goes, bandits, doing the air quotes. And then the boss goes, aha. And he calls in this little stable boy, and whispers something to him. The stable boy comes back, or goes out, comes back in, whispers something back, and Bruno's boss calls him to the office. Now, I am 90% certain this kid is clearly doing the equivalent of checking the vehicle's VIN number.
Yeah, pretty much, yeah.
It clearly is not the coach that Bruno was assigned. So Bruno is, of course, immediately fired.
Loudly.
All kinds of pissed.
An aggressive
Very
promotion.
Loudly. The boss comes out as Bruno is leaving. His boss comes out as Bruno is leaving and rips the Ratchet Lines patch off insignia. Of his coach insignia or off of his coat he doesn't have a coach anymore.
Not anymore.
And that is where we kind of ended, is with Bruno being fired in episode 6. I mean, there's a lot of setting up in this episode. A lot of it is very subtle, obviously. You know, we have the whole thing with the Emperor, you know, what's going on with that weird dude. Some of this is going to get cleared up real quick. But the gang has an appointment to meet Joseph and do some other things in episode 7, which is called Bruno, Poor Bruno.
Okay, real quick, before we move off of episode 6, one of the things that happened at the beginning in the lead into the episode, the players are talking, and Danny brings up, she says she wants to see who's going to bet on whose character is going to die first. And the consensus is, among the players, that it's either going to be Nina or Lucky. Which I think is phenomenally hilarious.
It is. It is, considering where they're at right now. At time of recording, they just put out, for people on the Patreon, which we're going to talk about at 7, because 7 is, we have the first official announcement of the Patreon's been made. Dan and I are obviously part of it. At time of recording for Patreon members, episode 205 has come out. And so there are some changes to the party in episode 205. Who's changing? Yep. I'm not going to tell you. You'll have to go
listen.
We're not going
to say, we're not spoiling anything.
Yeah. Listen, you're going to have to finish listening to these episodes. And then keep listening. And then you're going to have to wait. And you're going to have to wait for us to talk about it. I'm kidding. You don't have to. But go listen to 205 if you want to hear all this stuff. And then come back and listen to them again with us. Because, you know,
100%.
We've clearly listened to this way, way too many times. I think I'm now on my 15th re-listen for the show.
Yeah, yeah. I'm at least on my 4th or 5th. I don't quite have the drive time to be able to get through 15 run-throughs of the
Yes, pop-up, but... well, I don't have drive time, but I do have hobble around with a cane time. Okay. So I have way more of that. But yes, they have a Patreon now, starting in episode 7. And we probably will have one soon. I haven't really decided on that. We'll figure that out soon. They also address some rules things that they get wrong in the first two episodes, which also tells me that this is clearly probably the start of a new session. Yes. And this is one thing that this podcast in particular is really good about. A lot of actual plays, they don't really address those things, or they respond to them in a very tongue-in-cheek way, which I don't understand. But, you know, PCN podcasts, Gapapa in particular,
that's
in this case,
they're the best.
Very good about it. Yes, and they're very appreciative of all their listeners. They're very appreciative of us, which is amazing. I cannot put into words how ecstatic I am that they actually enjoy that we're doing this. So, but they're very good about that. They're very good about addressing rules issues, and it's very much a point in their credit. So, what does the party do? Well, the party starts off with Lucky wants to find his dad's shop.
And everybody should know where it's at, because the Emperor's, you know, the Emperor's alchemist. Everybody should know him, right?
And so Lucky goes around asking about the Emperor's alchemist. And of course, no one has any idea what the hell he's talking about.
He actually successfully makes a gossip check to find out that nobody knows who this guy is.
Yes. Yeah. He even goes up to a guard, and the guard's like, I don't know what you're talking about. Get the hell away from me. What? The Emperor doesn't have an alchemist, you friggin' weirdo. I do want to touch on this for a minute, because it's going to be a thing throughout the show. It is a trope, okay? I'm not going to spoil anything for future episodes. I'm just going to say, well, I guess maybe it could be considered a minor one, but Lucky trying to find his dad is a trope that goes in the show, along in the show for a very long time.
Yes.
And it kind of...
You could call it a really long-term ambition.
Yes. I'll be honest with you, though. It kind of bugs me a bit here. Now, I'm not saying that just as somebody watching the show. It is a hilarious trope in the show. But as a GM, I feel like part of this might have been Dan sticking a little too close to the book. And then because of that, this kind of turns into this shtick and everything like that. I'm not sure. I feel like, you know, maybe part of this was because they were so new into the system and into the game and everything. But for me in particular, the way I GM, I probably would have turned this into more of a story.
Yep.
But
okay.
I think maybe Dan was just trying to get them to get through the book and start to get some momentum going, which I understand. He didn't do anything wrong. It's just different styles of GMing.
Understood.
I feel like this would have been a really good opportunity to build some more of the story with Lucky. Maybe we'll get that in the future.
We'll see.
We'll see. Again, we, you know, have another description of the Imperial building style as they're kind of going around the city. At this point, they decide that they eventually want to go to the Street of 1,000 Taverns or 100 Taverns. I think it's referred to as both in many places.
Yes.
But they also want to go sell some of the loot they have. And so everybody has tons of loot, except for Lucky. And
yeah, Lucky's just basically looking for somebody to give him a couple of gold pieces.
Yeah. And they all just kind of go and sell their loot. Lucky in particular needs something very specific, though. See, Lucky is a witch. And witchcraft in the Empire is very, very illegal. We kind of touch on this a bit in episode 0, where because Lucky is a witch, that means he has access to magic, he can wield magic, he can see it, all these kinds of things, but he doesn't know how to filter the chaos out of it. In Warhammer, all magic comes from the realm of chaos, where the chaos gods live. It is a bad thing.
Yep.
Okay? However, it then comes through this big warp gate that's in the north of the old world and blows through the world. And the elves a long time ago figured out how to kind of filter the worst of that chaos energy out so that they can then use magic. And for a long time, that's...
They surf the winds of magic.
Oh, you are ridiculous. I didn't even catch that. Yes, they surf the winds of magic. They fly kites in it. And so eventually they, at some point, kind of establish the colleges of magic and teach humans to do that. Humans are able to do it similarly. They don't filter out the chaos magic as well as elves do, but they filter out a good, you know, most of it. As a witch, Lucky doesn't know how to do that. So anytime Lucky uses magic, it's inherently dangerous to him, to everyone around him, to the world in general.
Yeah.
Which is also why witches are illegal. If you want to use magic, you have to go learn at the college. There's a lot of different ways people can get into the college, but it's exceedingly dangerous for somebody to just come up to the college and go, "Hey, I'm a witch. Can I learn how to be a wizard now?"
Yeah, I don't think it works that way.
Will they get into the college? Maybe. Hmm. I mean, maybe it could.
Will they spend it in the dungeon, you know, chained to the wall?
Yeah, probably. They might also just get executed. It's kind of a flip of the coin there. So Lucky decides he's not going to roll the dice that way. He's instead going to go find somebody to forge a wizarding license for him. Which, Altdorf is definitely going to be the place to get one of those. So He eventually goes walking around and he finds this dwarf forger. And the dwarf tells him it's going to be, I think, 3 gold.
Yep.
Lucky doesn't have that kind of money. Nobody has that kind of money. So he realizes this. He's like, ah.
Nobody in the party for sure.
Oh, yeah. He realizes this. He goes, ah, crap. Goes back to the party. Kind of talks with them a bit. You know, Bruno offers him some money. However, the money he gives him is a single gold. With 50% interest compounded daily. Now, I don't know what compounded means, but I'm assuming that means the interest gets added on every day.
Yeah, it gets recalculated and grows really, really fast. At 50% interest compounded daily, Lucky would end up owing him 10 gold inside of a week at some point.
Is that even what... Okay, so you actually know how much this would be. Okay,
yeah,
so...
Yeah.
If Lucky eventually pays him back, we're going to need to track this. Maybe we'll do it at the end of every episode or something like that. Maybe we'll track to see how many days have gone by, see how much money Lucky actually owes Bruno. I believe everybody else gives him enough to where he has 2 gold. And what he decides to do is he goes back to the forger, the dwarf gentleman, and he offers to give the guy literally every single thing he owns.
Including Rolf's dagger, right? I
think. Yes, including a dagger he took from his dead friend, Rolf. And at this point, I feel like Dana's kind of taking a bit of pity on Tim. Because I believe he makes Tim roll a check.
That's his first
mistake. Yeah, he makes Tim roll a check, and I think Tim fails it. But basically the deal they make is that Lucky is going to come back to this dwarf and give him another 2 gold when he comes back to Altdorf. And as collateral, the dwarf is going to take the two gold Lucky has now and Rolf's dagger. And that's going to be his collateral. Lucky, of course, agrees because, you know, he doesn't want to get killed by a witch hunter. Goes back and tells everybody, "I graduated!" And everybody claps and... It's very funny to me. Carl is kind of suspicious about Lucky at this point. Like, something about all of this just smells a little bit off about him. He's not quite sure what it was, but he's definitely decided Lucky's a little bit shady at this point, which, yeah, he is.
It could be that Lucky was talking about running a double rook scam.
I think at some point, trying to increase or... At some point, he was trying to convince Carl to to get the inheritance, and Carl's been kind of wishy-washy about it. He doesn't feel right about lying about his identity. And Lucky kind of, and everybody else just suggests, you know, look, who else is going to get this money? It'll go to the government. Government's not going to use it. Come on.
So, and eventually, you know, Carl decides, yeah, okay, if nobody... the guy on the dead body, or the guy that was the dead body, the
one his mustache was made for, yes.
The dead man that looked like him in the woods.
There you go.
On the letter for him about the inheritance, it says that he is the last living relative. And so they kind of use that in a mixture of other things to kind of convince Carl that, look, nobody else is getting this money, so it means it's going to go to the state. You can do a lot more good with this than the government's going to be able to. So Carl says, okay, yep. You know what, fine, yeah, I'll do that. And that's kind of eventually how they get him to really get on board with this. They kind of had him before, they definitely do now. Eventually, they make their way to the Street of 100 Taverns. They find Joseph there. It's the one they had previously agreed to. Unfortunately, we just don't have that in our notes because it was a quick thing. And yep. Joseph buys them all a bottle of wine each. And half a pheasant, which is tons of food. That's a lot. Yeah. This man is very generous.
It's more than Lucky's eaten in a week.
Yeah. As they're eating their dinner, two nobles enter with some bodyguards. But the group kind of notices that maybe a minute or two before this, this other guy had come into the room that was covered in leather armor. He had this really slick back hair. The room was kind of silent when this guy walked in. He's clearly kind of like a covert bodyguard bully kind of dude. Mina describes him as he's here looking for trouble. And so Lucky decides he wants to go be that guy's friend. And Carl basically forces Lucky to sit down and tells him no. It is at this point the nobles come in, and they go up to the bar and they buy two balls of brandy. And they proceed to do the brandy bounce. And it's gross.
A fun game, only for nobles.
It's nasty.
Yeah.
A fun game for nobles and not for anyone else. What it is they chug not the entire bottle of brandy, but as much as they can get in a single chug, which then, of course, causes them to throw up. And they do so on some nearby peasant, somebody that's not a noble, because what are they going to do? Attack a noble? They can't do that.
Especially not with their bodyguards right there.
Yes. So they do that to a patron, and then Bruno, being oblivious, goes up to the bar, and he tries to order some drinks for himself on the table. And they start to make fun of Bruno and call him a little piggy. And then Bruno turns to them and says, "Sir, who are you calling little?"
Yes.
At which point, the man starts chugging brandy. Bruno knows what's coming. He tries to take the bottle of brandy from the guy. And the guy throws up on him anyway.
Yep. After a fortune reroll and calling to the dark gods.
Yes. It doesn't work. Sorry. They vomit on him. They cover him.
Yep.
And I love the role playing here from JB. I love when people get into character as much as JB did in this moment. Because he kind of explains what he does next as Bruno's sitting there. He just got fired. And he's honest. Let's be honest. JB's honest. Bruno knows he got fired. Bruno is well aware of the reality of what's going on. He just denies it on a consistent basis. So
fair.
Bruno just takes all of this, you know, he's puked on. He looks down. He sees the torn part of his jacket where that Ratchet Lines insignia was. He just gets fired. And this rage just builds up inside him. And he tries to hit the noble, which... yeah, I don't think he's that out of line for it at all. At this point, I call him the bully guard, steps up and kind of stops Bruno. Carl gets up and kind of pulls Bruno back and says, you know, oh, I'm sorry, you know, this won't happen again. He's just had a really bad day. He's drunk, blah, blah, blah. Tries to make excuses. The bully then decides, no, he's here to start a fight, so we're going to start a fight. And he tries to hit Carl. And he misses.
Yep.
It is at this point that Mina escalates the situation by grabbing one of the empty bottles of wine and throwing it at the guy. She misses.
She's not going to waste a full bottle.
Yeah. No, that'd be terrible. She misses, but the guy gets visibly, you know, rattled. He's like, this isn't how this is supposed to work. Come on, this is supposed to be a fight. And he storms out, and Mina says, "Oh, poor bully, poor baby." And I love it. It's great.
Yep.
I love all of it. The crowd cheers as, you know, the guy leaves, and then the nobles kind of get disappointed. Oh, we were hoping for a fight. They leave, their bodyguards leave, all this. The tavern starts cheering. I believe the owner gives them a free round of drinks. And they also
Buys another one. I can't remember.
Or Joseph buys another one. Either way, they get more drinks. They also notice at this point that the owner of the bar, the barmaid, has an improvised weapon that is two stool table legs chained together like nunchucks.
Yes.
And that's her, I'm gonna, you know, break up the fight weapon, I guess. And it's great.
They've got a lot of names they come up with for those. I think Stool Chucks was one of
Stool
them.
Stool Chucks, I believe, was one. Yes, I'm a fan of that one.
Relatively early on,
yes.
They were going to, maybe not use that one.
So, it's interesting, though, as this is happening, you know, Dan just kind of mentions it in a side thing, but I think it's going to be a bit bigger of a deal because he starts kind of mentioning, and he goes into detail, but I don't think the party picked up on it, about how the story of them kicking out these nobles starts to kind of get blown up. And yep. That's not necessarily a good thing, but
no,
it happens. As you know, they finish their drinks. Joseph is drunk by this point. But they finish their dinner. Joseph says, you know, you're all welcome to come sleep on the boat with him. We find out the name of his boat is the Beer Belly. He's got this big barge, and they can sleep on the barge. So they leave the tavern and they start heading towards the barge. But as they do, they're walking a bit, and then they start to hear somebody kind of walking a little too quickly behind them. And that takes us into episode 8. We're on a boat. Turns out the people following them are more of the ear scratchers. I believe it's actually the same dude, but this time he's got a friend.
Yep.
And they do the same thing. You know, they approach the group. They're really kind of focusing on Carl. They're doing the weird ear scratching thing again. Nobody knows what's going on. They're like, all right, like these dudes must be drunk too. And then out of nowhere, immediately crossbow bolts come and shoot these two dudes in the back. And dead. Gone. It's very sudden. Nobody in the party really expected it. Bruno, of course, then immediately shouts, "Assassins!" and tries to combat roll into the alleyway with Joseph. Bruno is, they describe him as 5 feet tall and 5 foot round. So just imagine a human bowling ball trying to do a combat roll while holding somebody that's bigger than them.
Obviously very stealthily done.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Yes. If there's one person who just shouts inconspicuous, it's Bruno. Lucky yep. looks around, doesn't see anybody, and goes, "Oh, okay," and decides to loot the bodies. He doesn't really find anything. I think he finds a pair of daggers and a couple pennies.
Yes.
But he mm-hmm. does notice as he's checking these bodies that they both have matching tattoos of a hand.
Purple. Right? A purple hand?
I think Dan kind of hinted at that, but maybe it was a blue or something like that. I think the way Dan sure. described it was, it's kind of too dark for them to see the color. It's just a dark tattoo of a hand.
Right, yes.
You know, they kind of go, okay, that was weird, but we should probably get the hell out of here. So they hightail it to the boat, and we get our first impression of the Beer Belly. And it is a big, big old barge. It is very, very large. It's a large barge. And it is so big that it actually has a sail on it. Instead of, you know, just oars, it's so big that it needs a sail to push it down the Reich. And Joseph takes them down to the quote-unquote crew quarters. And there's a lot of, you know, those cargo net hammocks that everybody sees in pirate movies. Well, they have those. Dan has the party roll, I believe, athletics checks to get into the hammock.
Yes. For humor's sake.
Yes. And I think the only one that made it was Carl. Maybe Mina?
I believe you are correct.
Yeah.
No, I don't think Mina made it at all.
Yeah, which it makes sense. You know, Carl's probably been sleeping in these kinds of things a while. I would imagine they're common lodging around the docks.
Sure.
They get a good night's sleep, and then they wake up the next day, and they decide they're going to sail to Weisbrook. It's a pretty simple day. You know, they eventually get to the Weisbrook Canal, which we can talk about this a bit. They are going to Bogenhofen, but they're stopping in the town of Weisbrook, which is named after, or the canal is named after Weisbrook. And basically the way it works is, if they were to just go directly down the Reich to get to the Bogen, they would have to go past, I believe, the city of Karaburg. If memory serves, I could be wrong. They go past a city. And that city has its own taxes for, you know, boats coming from the Reich to get on the Bogen. But the Weisbrook Canal was built so that people could get around that. It takes a little bit longer, but less taxes, more profit. It's very popular for obvious reasons.
Sure.
And yep. Joseph is not very popular on it because unless he pulls over and moors the boat to the sea, the side at certain spots in the canal, his boat kind of takes up the entire canal.
Yeah, there's like a foot or two on either side of it.
There is, yeah. We actually have a very funny moment where as they're sailing down it, there's a guy yelling at the beer belly to get that fat barge out of the way, and Lucky starts yelling at him. And Joseph kind of goes, hey, what are you yelling at this guy about? Well, he was saying mean things about the barge. He's saying it's a fat barge just because it is a fat barge, Lucky. And Lucky goes, no, it's a beautiful barge. It's beautiful. It's my
first barge.
It's my first barge. It's my first job. It's great. Eventually they get to Weisbrook, and we get a pretty good description of Weisbrook from Dan. It's a small town, but because of the canal, it's growing very rapidly. There's lots of construction. They kind of see the town coming before they get there because of how much construction there is. It's very much a, it's reminiscent of if you ever see those old Western movies, kind of about the towns that spring up in the Old West.
Yep, yeah, around the gold rush.
During the gold rush, exactly. And they just, you know, within the span of a few days, the town triples in size with the buildings and everything because so many people start to live there. Kind of a similar vibe here. They decide that they're going to head to the Black and Gold Inn for dinner. Or no, they were going to the Happy Man.
Well, the Happy Man, yes.
And Joseph, you know, Lucky kind of asks Joseph, are you going to buy us dinner again tonight? And just says, nope. You can have dinner on the boat, or, you know, it's a couple pennies at a tavern. And Lucky goes, all right, fine. As they're on their way to the Happy Man, they spot this weird-looking guy that everyone else doesn't really recognize this dude, but they do notice he has this weird neck scar. Carl does recognize this man. He's the guy he saw in the Königsplatz. And it's just, it's kind of weird. They decide that, you know what, let's go to the Black and Gold Inn. Let's see if we can find the guy, you know, maybe talk to him. Is he following us? Is this just a coincidence?
Sure.
They go into the inn, and it's crowded. It's busy. Again, think Gold Rush Town, and there's two saloons in the town. They're swarmed. And so, of course, they don't see this guy in there. They don't really find him anywhere. But they decide, you know what, we're already here. Let's have dinner. They eat dinner there. Lucky, again, is super stingy. And ends up, I believe Carl buys him dinner.
Yep.
Or something like that.
Well, the other thing, and this is one of the notes I wrote about this one, is that Bruno is basically an eating machine. He's eating two people's food. He's ordering double portions, eating whatever's not being, you know, readily eaten by anybody else in the party. And drinking as much as possible. Yeah.
Kind of the same vibe we get from the last episode we did, where, you know, when they're eating breakfast, he's scraping everybody's plates clean and everything like this. He's eating a lot and drinking a lot, though I think the drinking is kind of understandable considering the other night and, or I guess previous day. I mean, that whole day sucked for him. We do have an interesting point, though, that doesn't get raised in this. It's kind of not talked about until latter episodes. But we are going to bring it up here. Bruno has a family. Bruno has a family in Altdorf.
Yes.
And everybody kind of forgets about that. Now, I get why, is at this point, it's, you know, early in the show and everything like that. They haven't really gotten all the backstory stuff down yet, as we'll see in these, you know, coming episodes. But I think it's important to bring that up in the framing of the character that is Bruno, is that Bruno comes to Altdorf, to his home, for the first part in what could be a year. You know, Carl was gone for a year. He hasn't been in Altdorf for a year. He was assumedly with Bruno, so Carl or Bruno was probably gone for a year as well.
Right.
He then loses his job, goes and gets drunk, and then doesn't go and see his family. He instead takes a new job immediately and leaves.
Yep.
Now, I don't know if this is a lack of character in Bruno or a lack of caring about his family. It certainly could be interpreted that way. It could also be that, frankly, Bruno is just terrified about failing his family and in so doing ensures that he will.
Yeah, I think that there's a lot of not wanting to go home and face that conversation in yes. what he's choosing to not do.
I think that is, you hit the nail right on the head there. I will say, this is going to become a constant theme with me as we go through the show, of me trying to rationalize how Bruno works and try and figure out how an actual person that does the types of things Bruno does functions mentally. Because
that's a slippery slope.
It is. But as we talked about in episode zero, you know, I have this discussion a lot with my wife when we listen to the show about, you know, well, what happened, you know, she'll ask me about what happened now and we'll talk about what Bruno did. And it's, yeah. She just gets mad. And so I have to try and rationalize it and think about, okay, as a character, how to, you know, why would a person like this do that? I'm very big on, as a GM, when I play through these games, and I try and get my characters to do this too. When you're in character, think about your character as a person. They've had experiences before this adventure. They'll have experiences after this adventure if they survive. How have those experiences right. shaped them? So I think that's really important when you, you know, you try and take in the psyche of Bruno, is, you know, think about, you know, what may have happened to this guy beforehand to make him act the way he does. Anyway, they eat their dinner.
No, I think you're onto it. Yeah. Yeah, they eat their dinner.
They then decide they're going to leave and go to the Happy Man anyway, just because they want to check out this other inn. I think part of it is because they just love the name. I think another part of it, they don't really mention it, is, you know, maybe the Nexgar guy went to that other inn. Let's, you know, maybe try and find this guy a bit. Let's see what's going on in this town. Lucky then suggests that somebody trail behind the party to make sure that they're not being followed. I mean, the last time that they thought they were being followed, two people ended up dead. So, right. Let's make sure we're not being followed again. He tries to kind of get Carl to do this because Carl is, you know, the big, strong, tough guy. I mean, it makes sense. But it Carl does. Just tells him, this is a terrible idea. That's a horrible idea. I'm not doing that. And so Lucky says, all right, I'll do it.
In true Lucky fashion.
In classic Lucky fashion. But then Lucky then says he wants Bruno to make a big deal about the party leaving. He wants to make it, he wants everyone to make sure that if someone is in here watching them, if someone is going to follow them, that they are, they know when the party leaves. Yes. Bruno decides that since, you know, Lucky wants a big scene, he's going to make a big scene. Carl and Mina go out. Lucky's still kind of sitting at the table. And Bruno gives a whole speech about, I am leaving now. Goodbye, everyone. And the whole inn kind of goes silent. And then somebody pipes up, okay, leave. Which he, of course, does. Mm-hmm. Lucky then waits just a bit. And then also walks out. As they're walking, you know, Lucky's within sight of them. He can see them. However, unfortunately, they go around a corner. And Lucky immediately gets shot in the back with a crossbow. as soon as the rest of the party is around a corner.
I think that's how they end episode 8, is with Lucky feeling the pressure in the middle of his back.
Yes. Yeah. Not a nice one. So we begin episode 9, of course, with Lucky being hit in the back by a crossbow. Episode 9 is titled Perilous Indeed, which, yeah, we're starting to see some of the peril here.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
Dan and the party ask Lucky, or ask Tim, so how is Lucky reacting to this? And we get one of my favorite sound bits that I so desperately want to ask Tim to isolate and send me, where it is Lucky yelling out, "Ow, my spine!" And I love it so much. I use it all the time in video games. Whenever, like, if I'm playing a game and my dude gets shot or knocked down, I just yell out, "Ow, my spine." It's great.
Yep.
And then, of course, the whole party fails a perception check to hear Lucky screaming.
Are you sensing a pattern here?
Yes.
Fair listener.
Yes. So then Lucky hears somebody come up behind him and they smack him in the back with, assumedly, you know, a club. They just start clubbing him. And then we have another great sound bit of Alex asking, can we have another perception check to hear the clubbing? Dan, being a benevolent GM, see, he's not always a bad GM, decides, yeah, okay, fine. They still fail. They still fail.
Yep. Because perception checks aren't something they do.
So Lucky then tries to get away. I believe what he says is, quote, like a possum that has been found out, he's going to try and scurry away as quickly as he can. Here's the problem with that. That invokes basically attacks of opportunity by the guy with the club. Which the guy then does. And I believe he gets the equivalent of breaking one of Lucky's legs. Because he scores a critical. Because if you're knocked prone, any hit on you, I believe if it goes through, is automatically a crit. Something like that. Correct. I might be getting the rules wrong. So because of this, Lucky doesn't want a broken leg, so he has to spend one of his fate points. Lucky has two. That's important, because then he gets shot with the crossbow again. And his hand gets split in half. So then...
His hand, which he needs to...
Which he needs to do magic,
witch stuff.
So, of course, Lucky then has to spend... Or Tim has to spend his second fate point. This means Tim is now out of fate points. Lucky is out of fate points. This is why in the last episode I was talking about...
No fate, no fortune.
Yes. This is why in the last episode I was talking about how big of a deal it is to balance your fate points and things like that, you know? I'm not going to go on too long of a tirade about this, but again, this is why, for anyone out there, if you play this game, please, please take my advice on this. Do 3 fate, 3 resolve. If you're doing a character that's not explicitly combat-focused, maybe do 4 and 2. That way you have plenty of fortune, you have plenty of fate, if and when something goes wrong, okay? Resolve is more meant for combat stuff. Just don't get super crazy, you know what I mean? So, eventually the party, you know, kind of hears all of this. Dan kind of gives them a gimme. Bruno then runs back around the corner, and threatens everybody with his blunderbuss. This is, of course, terrifying. Carl and Mina then charge the guy attacking Lucky, and Lucky runs away. The man then runs away. Mina and Carl chase him. Mina eventually decides she needs to go take care of Lucky, not necessarily take care of or try and get this guy knocked down. Carl doesn't realize Mina has stopped following him and continues to chase the guy and then gets in a fight with him and kills him. I believe he has his boat hook.
Yes. Yeah.
When he kills this guy, you know, people see this because the streets are not completely empty. People start yelling murder, which, you know, that's how, you know, neighborhood watch, kind of, you know, that's pretty much the best you've got when you don't have a large watch, which Weisbrook probably doesn't have at this point.
It's a growing city. They haven't grown there yet.
Exactly. I have to imagine a growing city. It's harder to keep up with who's going in and out and everything. They're probably having a growing watch, but they don't really have one yet. So Carl, of course, panics. He doesn't want to be arrested for murder and all these kinds of things. How does he explain this? Because he realizes nobody else is here from his group. So he panics. And he runs. And then, unfortunately, he gets lost trying to run. He ends up finding a hiding spot amidst some construction going on. He's kind of trying to, you know, be stealthy and everything like that. And then he sees somebody else in the area with him. And he recognizes it as the man they saw before, outside of the black and gold.
Right.
Now, it doesn't connect with Carl at this point that this is also the same guy from the Konigsplatz. That's important. He doesn't really recognize this. He just goes, wait, you're that same guy from earlier. And they start fighting. And they get to wrestling. Going back to Lucky real quick. The Watch eventually finds Bruno and Mina and Lucky. They're trying to, you know, help Lucky as best they can. But they don't have first aid training. The Watch finds him. They kind of explain the situation to the Watch. And the Watch takes them back to the Watch barracks to get Lucky some first aid and all these kinds of things. And tells them that they need to go find Carl. Going back to Carl, Carl is, you know, fighting this neck scar guy, I believe is what they're just calling him. You know, they're still wrestling and everything like that. The guy starts to get one up on Carl, and Carl starts to get afraid of, oh, this guy might kill me. So he kind of gets out of the fight. He ends up getting away from the guy. The Watch find Carl, and they go, wait a minute, are you Carl? You know, we found your friends. Carl kind of explains everything to them, and they end up taking him back to the Watch barracks.
Yes.
We get there, and Lucky is obviously getting his first aid and everything like that. Carl gets some care. They talk to the Watch captain, and he kind of tells them, okay, you need to leave now. Like, okay, we'll be on the lookout for this guy. And the party, you know, everyone kind of says, well, we don't want to just go back by ourselves. Can we have an escort? I believe they roll a charm check for this.
I think they, if memory you're serves. Right.
They rolled some kind of check for this.
It might have been a cumulative one, too.
The guy really doesn't want to, but he has two guards. He says, all right, escort them back. It is at this point that we have some reference to, apparently Mina has an aunt in a city. I don't know.
Sure.
It doesn't really come up again, but I just think it's funny of, you know, maybe we'll do a thing where we're tracking the family trees of all these characters.
I kind of see Mina being like Rose Nylund from the Golden Girls. And
yeah,
there's a lot of St. Olaf stories from CSDOT. So
they get back to the boats. They rest up. The Watch is there. Lucky gives the Watch a bottle of wine.
That's right, because he's still got two of them.
And asks them, you know, oh, but don't drink this until the morning. He's got two of them. Yeah, he didn't drink his. So they go, oh, okay, fine. They wake up the next morning. The bottle's still there. It's been drunk. Lucky picks it up and takes it for some reason. And they end up helping Joseph deliver some of the wine. Lucky's actually shockingly good at this. Mina is as well. Carl is doing better than everyone. This was his job.
Yep.
Bruno, on the other hand, is pouring sweat. He's terrible at this kind of... They do that, and then they come back to the boat, and they go sailing further down the river.
Right.
Lucky, you know, is kind of talking to everybody. They're all just kind of hanging out and, you know, just... I don't know what you would call it. Just kind of chatting as they're sailing down the river. And he comes and decides he wants to do some magic for everybody. They bring up his license and that he's a official wizard now.
This was yes, one of I the coolest things. Yes, I can see from your face you remember this. Yes. Yeah, yes. This is one of the coolest things.
Lucky offers to do a magic trick. And they go, oh, okay, yeah, do a magic trick. And he goes, okay, I need 2 silver. And everyone goes, nope, screw you. You're trying to scam us again. And Lucky basically goes, no, 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 you'll get it back. You'll get it back. Joseph decides, okay, yeah, if he's getting it back, and he gives Lucky the 2 silver. So Lucky takes the 2 silver and casts a spell to throw his voice to the other side of the boat.
Yep.
And just says, hey, I'm over here now.
Which works.
It does. It does. He does successfully cast some magic. I think this is our actually our first spell.
Yeah. The first one that works.
And, yeah, well, yes. Bruno and Carl are completely freaked out about this. Bruno is kind of freaked out. Carl is really freaked out. And we start to get our first kind of hints at Carl is afraid of anything superstitious. He doesn't like it. He's not a big fan of anything that is not natural. You know, anything to do with spooky stuff.
So it's the magic that screws with him, but he is religious. And the one thing that we missed, he made an offering to Manan at the beginning of the voyage. And I don't think we talked about that at all. But he showed some of his spirituality when they took off. Yes, he either dumped a little drink in the water, or he dropped a silver or a couple of pennies into the water as a gift to Manan. And that was at the outset. You are right.
I completely...
But we start to see Carl's piety. I'm going to
beat myself up for so long about that.
Yeah, don't. Please.
Yeah, it is one of my favorite moments. I love... You're right. No, you're 100% right. And I'm so mad at myself because this is the start of one of my favorite tropes in the show, because Manan is one of my favorite gods. And honestly, it is because of things like this with Carl.
Yep.
Where, yeah, he stays... Kudos to Alex. He stays so on top of any time he has the ability to do one of the tenets of Manan, he does it. He takes it very seriously, and right. I love it. So he's very faithful, but I think probably because of that, he's also very terrified of anything that doesn't have to do with Manan.
Right.
He has this faith in Manan, but anything else outside of Manan is just terrifying to him because he doesn't feel as faithful in those things.
Right.
He doesn't trust them. However, we have one other very important thing that happens with this.
Yep.
Mina says that this spell reminds her of tricks that her Uncle Chet used to do. So this is the first time we actually get backstory to Uncle Chet. We actually start to see more of this, you know, who he was and things like that. At this point, we kind of learned that, you know, he was just a guy that apparently young Mina brought home. Like, he needed a place to stay, and Mina just brought him home as a kid and was like, yeah, this is my friend. He said I was our uncle. Or he was my uncle.
Yep.
And her mom was just like, you have to stop bringing drunkards to our house. but apparently this one stuck, because Uncle Chet becomes a recurring character.
Yep. And the stories get better and better.
It does. Now, I have a thing that has just recently become something I'm trying to pitch. I'm always trying to push these little ideas into this show. How amazing would it be if Tim's dad, that he can't seem to find, is Uncle Chet?
I was just thinking the same thing.
Tricks, like throwing his voice and all these other crazy things that he gets up to, is because he's also a witch.
Or a wizard.
Or a wizard! Maybe he's a wizard. I don't know. But how amazing would that be? If all of this rivalry between Lucky and Mina, these crazy stories, all of that is because, in reality, they are siblings.
Cousins.
Oh, no, I see what you're saying. Cousins, yes. If they are actually... No, I get what you mean.
Yep.
Yes, but you get what I'm saying. Either way,
they're related.
If they're actually related, this is...
So then, by Lucky's logic, they could get married.
God.
You know... He is always saying...
I hadn't even thought of that. Oh, God, that's so great. I don't know if I want to be putting that out there now, but that's so great. I think I have to.
Mm-hmm.
At this point, everybody goes to bed. It's a long journey. And then, you know, again, it's funny... They bring this up in later episodes, and it's a long-running theme with any RPG, where you have, combat will take 3 hours to get through, and for them it's a whole episode. But, you know, they just traveled 3-4 days, and they get through that in one episode.
Right.
Because they wake up the next morning, and it's just similar shenanigans, hanging out on the boat, sailing down the boat. Carl is learning more about sailing and things like that.
I think he took up the boatman career, didn't he? I thought that Dan had put it out there that anybody who wanted to take the boatman career could do it for zero experience once they got on the boat. And I thought that Carl chose to pursue the boatman career at that point. Right? It was either at the beginning of episode 8.
Yes, you are correct. I had to I had to check my notes here. Yes.
Yep.
Yep. So, yeah, Carl has officially become a boatman, so he's doing boatman things. Joseph decides to teach everybody to fish, and Lucky doesn't understand what Joseph means. And we start to get some backstory about where Lucky is from, which we find out later is called Wittgenstein.
Mm-hmm.
Where apparently fish in Wittgenstein would just walk out of the Reich, and people just wait on the shore to club them. But you also can't eat these fish. It's really strange. Nobody has any idea what he's talking about. It will make sense eventually as we find out more about Wittgenstein.
Well, I guess that's things are kind of weird
there. Yeah. Joseph teaches everybody to fish. We find out that Mina is absolutely terrible at fishing. And this is also when we find out that Mina's last name is Fisher.
Yes.
Which is amazing. I love it. It's so perfect. I don't know if this is something they come up with on the fly. If it is, kudos. I love it. If it's not, well, even better.
Yep.
But that's kind of all that happens, is just that, you know, they're sailing on, they're fishing. It is at this point that they decide they're not going to sail through the night. They're going to tie up at one of the tie-offs on the side of the river. And the party goes to sleep, but as they go to sleep, they all fail perception checks. And they hear something scary outside. So hopefully, nobody listening to this hears anything scary outside right now. Because, you know, that would be terrifying.
It would be very bad. I'm getting a little scared myself.